Hello, 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 and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I am Scott Pienowski, your rotating host, and I am thrilled to talk to, I don't know who's on the Mount Rushmore for fantasy football, and I don't want to get in an argument over this guy over that guy, but if I was doing it, Evan Silva is on that list. You know him from all the years he did all the work at Roto-World, and now he's at Establish the Run, the site he's co-founded with Adam Levitan, doing all sorts of stuff. Over there, we're going to talk football. We're going to talk, look back, look forward, maybe give you something to bet on if you're so inclined. So before we get to Evan, let's remind you, bracket season is here. You can play this year's Yahoo Fantasy 50K Tourney Pick'em Contest. Wonder if Evan's going to pick Marquette. For your chance to win cash prizes, the bracket with the highest score will win the grand prize of $10,000. Sounds good to me. In a Las Vegas getaway, free to enter. Over 10,000 people will win cash prizes. You can sign up now at tourney.yahoo.com. I'm not eligible. I'm a Yahoo employee, but maybe Evan can win that. Mr. Silva, how you doing?
Doing well. The off season has given us a nice little respite, the early off season since the end of the Super Bowl, but news is starting to pick up. And, you know, we just got caught wind of a huge move in the NFL. And I think as this week progresses, we're going to see lots of cuts start to trickle in, maybe some extensions like the one that just came in. And then next week, I think it's going to be a big, it's going to be like madness next week.
Yeah, we're about to, you know, the asteroids are traveling and they're about to start colliding. And mm-hmm. then, you know, big names are going to be moving. We're not that far from free agency. We're not that far from the NFL draft and just the personnel. You know, the NFL, there's just going to be a ton of personnel shifts and we're going to have to try to figure out. We know the NFL more than other leagues is a reshuffle league. There'll be teams that were bad last year that will be good this year and vice versa. And we're going to try to sort that out. The big news you were alluding to, it sounds like the Cowboys and Dak Prescott have finally, I think everybody expected this. They finally gotten a deal done. Sounds like 4 years, $160 million. I was so sad when he got hurt. Of course, we want to see the best players on the field, but especially with Dak, because I thought with that defense being as bad as it was and with the skill talent they have, I felt like we were going to see like one of those once every 20-year seasons where the numbers were going to be ridiculous. Just give me a sense of where you're at with Dak and that Dallas offense.
Yeah, and I think that we can expect a bounce back because they're going to be getting back their two offensive tackles. They're going to be getting back their young center. Their offensive line just fell completely apart. I mean, there were times where their five projected starters weren't on the field together at all this past year. But yeah, I mean, Dak Prescott, he's been, you know, he came on the scene, I remember, in his rookie preseason, and it was kind of like Russell Wilson, where Russell Wilson just lit the preseason on fire, and people, you know, say, oh, well, you know, the preseason doesn't matter, et cetera, et cetera. You know, don't even pay attention to the preseason. Well, sometimes the preseason can be very informative and help you with your prognostication. And that was the case with Russell Wilson very much so. And it was also the case with Dak Prescott because he just looked so composed and in control. And he had that dual threat impact, which, you know, so many quarterbacks that has been kind of propelled them to or help play a part in propelling them to early career success. And the fact that they could get themselves out of trouble. And then also on third down, when, you know, the defense is clearing out to cover the guys going downfield, they can take off and run. Or Dak Prescott has been so proficient as like a goal line runner as well. You know, he's not a perfect passer. He's not the best anticipation passer in the world, but he's got a strong arm. He's, you know, accurate more often than not. He's a really good decision maker, and he's got that dual threat capability that can allow him to succeed despite not being the best anticipation passer in the league. And with the addition of Amari Cooper, which at the time was widely panned, and there was some reason for skepticism on that. But a guy that can win against man coverage like that as a route runner, and then the addition of Michael Gallup and CeeDee Lamb and getting back these offensive linemen, and this will be what I guess his third season with Kellen Moore as his OC. There's just a lot of continuity there, and continuity I found is something to bet on in the NFL. People are going to be a little bit scared of Cowboys players just because of the recency bias. But I think this is going to be an opportunity for us to just draft the heck out of them.
Continuity was kind of my watchword last summer. I use that word like they were giving me a $100 bonus every time I threw it out there. I'm so glad you brought up Russell Wilson, because I think if his rookie, we're not going to talk much about Wilson. I don't know where he's headed. If you have a prop on where to bet on Wilson playing next year, at any point you can throw it out. But his rookie year, Doug Farrar, who was a colleague of mine at Yahoo at one point, he's worked for a bunch of different sites, really sharp football guy. He had me on his radio show, and he was saying how he's close to the Seahawks. He lives in that area. And he was saying that was a year that they had signed Matt Flynn in free agency, but they still drafted Wilson. They saw potential, and he's like, he's going to be their starting quarterback. This is ridiculous, the value they got. I think they got a potential star here. And Farrar sold me on Russell Wilson in that 15 minutes we talked, and I said, I'm going to draft him in every league, maybe not one quarterback, but in the super flex leagues I played in, I made sure to prioritize this guy. And it took a while for them to kind of give him the keys to the offense. He was playing kind of under wraps for a while, but by the end of the year, he was smashing people. And I won, I think, the Mark Stopa League that year, which is a big money league, because Wilson was going ham in the playoffs. And that kind of put a little bookmark in my mind of what you're talking about. We can learn in preseason with Prescott. When I saw what he did in his preseason, I drafted him in leagues where getting a flyer quarterback would help. Remember, we didn't know if Tony Romo would come back that year and be the starter. I drafted Prescott like he would be a full season quarterback and really paid the dividends for that. Is there some do's and don'ts for what? Because there's going to be a lot of stuff in preseason that doesn't matter. I know in the past, you and Adam Levitan will talk about team preseason, you know, how you've done really well in DFS. I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on preseason, but when you watch preseason football, because we didn't have any preseason games at all last year, and I'm really not sure what the NFL plans on that going forward. But when it comes to a player that isn't maybe on the draft radar, who can get on it in August, just tell me what type of things you might be looking for. Maybe we can find another Russell Wilson or another Dak Prescott this year.
Just guys that I think, and it's the same with evaluating college players, just guys that pop off the screen a little bit when they're going up against their competition. You know, you can sort of tell the NFL player when you're watching a college game. You know, the NFL guys, they kind of stand out from the crowd. And I mean, even all these guys that are playing in preseason, and the sample size is small. So, you know, you can definitely be led astray at certain points. But guys that really stand, I mean, the guys that are playing in preseason, they were stars in college, you know. So guys that stand out among their competition, I think, in every aspect of football. Go watch a high school football game. You can tell the guy who might have a chance to play, you know, D1 or, you know, let alone in the NFL, like that guy is popping out. So just guys that stand out among the rest. And it's not a foolproof. It's not foolproof. I mean, I remember, you know, Andre Williams looked really good in his first preseason. You know, the famous one that everybody falls back on when they like to, you know, take a dump on the preseason is Amir Abdullah, you know.
Or Christian Michael, right?
Christian Michael, yeah, yeah. And as we learned, like, those guys had serious flaws in their games that, I mean, were even maybe identifiable on their college tape, and maybe is something that, you know, that we should have known going in to some extent. Like, Andre Williams had, like, no pass catching, you know, aptitude whatsoever. And he really couldn't move, you know, from an agility standpoint. So, but when you would get him a crease, I mean, he could look special at times. And that's what happened in his rookie preseason. And Amir Abdullah, he really did have dynamic traits, you know, but he fumbled too much and he couldn't pass block. And Christine Michael had, you know, just a litany of shortcomings as a football player. But there was a reason that he popped off. He was an amazing athlete. But, yeah, I mean, it's easier to analyze in hindsight, of course. It's always easier to analyze in hindsight. But, I mean, still, like, I think that, you know, there were reasons that those guys popped off, even though they wound up not being successes.
Let's talk about, we'll stay in the NFC East, and let's talk about another really interesting player who doesn't have much of a sample yet. We saw the Eagles finally go to Jalen Hurts. I think we were asking all last year, like, what would it take for Carson Wentz to get benched? Eventually, Wentz out, Hurts in. Wasn't perfect at times, but, man, he showed a lot of good things. Obviously, he had interesting college career. We ended up at a couple of different places, and it can be hard sometimes to know what to make of talent that comes out of Alabama. You're surrounded with so many other good players. I really don't know what to do with Tua right now, or maybe even with Mac Jones, because they're throwing to the best athletes in the world, it feels like. But anyway, Hurts, I thought he looked good. We know Wentz is out. It's possible they could draft a quarterback. They've obviously gone with a new coaching staff. I'm excited for what I saw. And because of that rushing backboard, we know that Hurts is capable. This is one of my favorite fantasy things. He can have a bad real life game and put up like a top five fantasy score. Yeah. That's how valuable that Konami code hat tip Rich Rebar. That's how valuable that is. Give me a sense of how you feel about Hurts right now.
I would just say that I don't know. I remember him playing at Alabama, and you know, he eventually lost his job to Tua there. And that's why he transferred to Oklahoma. And man, he played early in his college career, and he was not good. I remember specifically watching OJ Howard, reels, and watching his quarterback. I mean, the only way that they could get OJ Howard the ball as a receiver was like shovel passes, because I mean, Jalen Hurts, like, he like couldn't throw to be a little bit hyperbolic. And so I think that created, you know, not necessarily a bias, but that's, you know, that's your first impression of Jalen Hurts. And then he goes to Oklahoma, where, I mean, they've just been just cranking out, NFL players, some studs, some duds. But, you know, in that Big 12, defenseless conference with, one of the best offensive minds in all of football there in Lincoln Riley, you know, was Jalen Hurts a product of the system? That became a question mark. He went in the second.
Two straight Heisman Trophy winners, right? I mean, Murray and Mayfield, yeah.
Yeah. And then Jalen Hurts goes to the NFL. He's a second-round pick. The history of second-round pick quarterbacks in the NFL is not very good. There have been a couple decent ones, but for the most part, second-round quarterbacks in the NFL do not work out. But then he gets his opportunity. I mean, he definitely looked like he belonged. And he went in there with, you know, if you look at his supporting cast, I mean, it was just decimated by injury, especially on the offensive line. Zach Ertz just fell off a cliff dealing with injuries. Dallas Goedert was hurt for a time. Jalen Reagor was hurt. DeSean Jackson was hurt. I mean, you know, and despite that, I think that Jalen Hurts looked like he belonged. And he has that dual threat capability that has, again, translated to early career success for quarterbacks. And now what do we get today? Jeffrey Lurie. There's a report that Jeffrey Lurie, the Eagles owner, wants the Eagles to give Jalen Hurts a year. And maybe instead of, you know, there has been some talk that, hey, maybe the Eagles might trade up, try to get a quarterback. They're sitting at number six right now. That's sort of not in prime territory to get what Trey Lance or Zach Wilson, or I don't know, maybe they'll have a shot at Trey Lance. But I think it's really interesting that they would. I mean, you can put Jalen Reagor around, you can put Dallas Goedert around. A bunch of these offensive linemen are coming back now, and the supporting cast all of a sudden goes from terrible to potentially average to above average. And Jalen Hurts has that dynamic dual threat capability. And I mean, he's 66-1 to win MVP. I know this sounds crazy. I know it sounded crazy last year to talk about Josh Allen as a potential MVP candidate. But if you're looking for a long shot, I mean, there are a couple that I think are pretty good. And Jalen Hurts is near the top of that list.
You mentioned in passing Jalen Reagor. And I wonder if there might be a buying opportunity on him. And yeah. I want to be full disclosure. I made a couple of cheap Twitter jokes about Reagor. I gave him my fictional N'Keal Harry Award of the receiver with a bunch of a high draft slot who really did nothing with it. I know Harry's been hurt a lot in his first 2 years, but as a Patriots fan, I can't help but look at the player. You know, they could have had Terry McLaurin. You know, they have N'Keal Harry. They could have had DK Metcalf. They could have had AJ Brown, and on it goes. And Reagor, unfortunately for him, had the misfortune of being drafted right before Justin Jefferson, who just looks like an oh my god player. Talk about a guy you want to flash. The first time you watch Justin Jefferson, you just fall in love with him. But Reagor played with really bad teammates at TCU. Just about everything went wrong for this Philadelphia offense. The offensive line was hurt like the first day of practice. It felt like that line had already started to crumble. You feeling any last year's bum, you know, depressed market, maybe get in on Rager? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. And I don't know, you know, this time of year, the theory is that you really shouldn't trust a whole lot. And maybe this is misinformation coming out about, you know, what Jeffrey Lurie wants to see with the Eagles. But I think it does make sense for them to trade down and give Jalen Hurts a year, give him the keys for a year, and let him grow with Jalen Reagor. And Dallas Goedert, I think, can be an absolute monster. It looks like Zach Ertz is on his way out of town for sure. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we're kind of starting to talk ourselves into a team stack possibility here with, you know, maybe Miles Sanders as a second rounder, and then, you know, you fill it in with Goddard, maybe in FFPC with the 1.5 point premium scoring. Goddard maybe, you know, in the fourth round, and then you bring it back with Jalen Reagor in the sixth or the seventh, and then Jalen Hurts in the ninth or tenth. And now we're talking about a pretty exciting team stack again, with a lot of parts coming back and guys that can score in bunches. Jalen Reagor does have big play capability. Dallas Goedert, I think, he could be a top five fantasy tight end in 2021. And then Jalen Hurts, I think you make a great point that he can have a bad game and still put up like 29 fantasy points because of the way he plays.
I know people are going to be in on Dallas Goedert. He's not going to be any kind of a secret. He might be one of those persons who's on so many sleeper lists that it just seems silly to even put that tag on him. But I will guarantee you this, he'll be on at least a few of my teams, because I feel like that pinata is going to get smashed really soon, and I want to be in on it. Let's quickly just talk about, as we make this a de facto NFC East preview, the last time we saw the Washington football team, remember the team that challenged Tampa Bay the best maybe during their championship run might have been the WFT, where Taylor Heinicke had a really nice game. And we know Antonio Gibson was coming on like gangbusters. He just impressed for a guy who hardly played at Memphis. What a baller he looked like. I fell in love with McLaurin, you know, very early in his rookie year. He was held back by the quarterback play at times the last 2 years, but he's super talented. Logan Thomas had turned into a tight end of interest in his late 20s. I think he's a fun team. I don't know who the quarterback is. It sounds like Heinicke might get a chance. Maybe they're going to draft somebody. Maybe they'll make a trade. Just give me just, you know, really a brief overview of what you see with the WFT.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with everything that you mentioned there. Terry McLaurin had, what, almost 1,120 yards despite suffering two high ankle sprains. Logan Thomas, I think early in the season he was playing slow. And I think the more that you watched him as the season progressed, he started to play fast and look confident as, you know, every down tight end. I mean, he was like top five among tight ends in snaps played. And that was really his first full year. I mean, he's been playing tight end for a few years now, but he hasn't really been playing very much. And he played a ton last year. And I think that you could see the improvement over the course of the season. I think that the same could even be said for Antonio Gibson, who, as you mentioned, didn't play a whole lot in college. And I thought that he kept getting better. He got hurt at the end of the season and he kind of finished slow. But I mean, the talent with him is incredibly evident. It's so, so obvious. I think that Scott Turner, the OC for Washington, did a really good job. I started to kind of like him toward the end of their run in Carolina. Like he seemed like he was maximizing the talent that he had. And then I think he absolutely maximized the talent that he had in his first year in Washington. And they should continue to stack talent. They're just not in position to go get a solution at quarterback, you know, a long-term franchise caliber solution. And so they might have to have a quarterback controversy that, like, involves Taylor Heinicke and Kyle Allen and, you know, somebody else, because they're not drafting high in the first round. And I don't know, maybe they might have an opportunity at Mac Jones. Some people think that he could go top 10, and you can't say it would shock you, because there are a lot of quarterback needy teams. But I think that ultimately what they're going to end up with is like a game manager type at quarterback, because their defense is so loaded. And that's just kind of what they're going to have to do this year, because they're just not positioned to grab one of these big time quarterbacks up early in the first round.
I'm so glad you mentioned Scott Turner, because I think one of your biggest strengths as a fantasy analyst and an NFL analyst as a whole is understanding what is the team's objective? Who are the decision makers on this team? What are they trying to do? What does Scott Turner like to do? How does he use his talent? That's what we're trying to figure out, is what do these teams, and sometimes we have to go by what they do and not what they say. So much of what teams will tell you with coach speak should go just out the window, but occasionally they'll be telling the truth about something. I always feel like if they give you good news, it's something you have to be careful with. Whenever they tell you something negative, I feel like that's the stuff you have to focus on, because they only tell you negative stuff when it seems like it's really true. But a big part, I think, of your work is just being so good about reading the tea leaves with GMs or our offensive coordinators. So I think it's something that we all would benefit from as we add that to our fantasy toolbox. Quickly, let's touch on the Giants. I don't really know if Daniel Jones is going to make it or not. I think the Giants are pretty close to, it's going to be kind of a make or break year with them. Saquon Barkley has had trouble staying on the field. It seems like that's a lot of guys on this team, right? I mean, Shepard seems to get hurt a lot. Evan Engram did get in a full season, a little bit disappointing. Wayne Gallman, I guess kind of a ham and egger, but from volume alone, he ended up being a pretty useful player last year. And sometimes you can just get the touches figured out. You can get some nice, you know, don't be a snob with the talent sometimes. Just get the guy who's getting 15 touches and you can do something with that. What's on your mind with the Giants?
No, yeah. I mean, that's something that, you know, I've had to, like, it kind of took me years to understand that, you know, don't be a talent snob, you know. That's not a winning strategy. I mean, it's great to be able to identify talent, you know, and some people, I guess, are a little bit better than others. But at the end of the day, like, you know, we all have a lot of hits and a lot of misses. And you know, not being a talent snob, I think, is absolutely critical, especially at a position like running back where, you know, as the season progresses, I mean, they just drop like flies, you know. And you know, who cares if a guy started the season third on the depth chart? Like, that's the guy you want. You know, I don't care what you thought about him when he played at Clemson or whatever. Like, if he's going to have a chance at 17 to 20 touches in any given game, you know, he can go for 100 plus yards and a touchdown, you know, and he could catch four or five passes and, you know, score 21 fantasy points. And that's a killer advantage to have. Just for a guy that you can get off the waiver wire like you could Wayne Gallman last season. I don't know, the Giants are – it's hard to be super optimistic about them. I mean, are they really going to be able to take a step forward with Jason Garrett as their OC? It seems strange to me that there was never any discussion of them maybe trying to upgrade at offensive coordinator after the season – when they really didn't do anything well offensively this past year. And we kind of know Jason Garrett's history and, you know, just not an innovative offensive mind.
Where are you at with Barkley after the last couple of seasons he's had? Would you be comfortable spending a high first round pick or even a mid first round pick on him?
Probably. I guess I'd have to sit down and actually do a draft, and I haven't done that yet. But I think that I probably would. During the course of last year, after he went down, I traded him in a dynasty league for Dalvin Cook and Adam Thielen. And I didn't wind up winning the league, but I came in like second or third, and I'm still feeling okay about that one. You know, even though I got that first year where I clearly had the advantage, and now technically or theoretically, the guy who got Saquon is supposed to, you know, kind of lead the way for the duration of the trade and the duration of these guys' careers. But I'm still feeling pretty good about that. And I still do think that I would take him certainly somewhere in the first round. I don't know about, you know, top two or three, like we would have been taking him at the start of last season though.
Totally fair. The words of Evan Silva, who's one of the co-founders of Establish the Run. He's the guest today on the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast, and I am Scott Pianowski. All right, let's talk about some broad stuff, just some fun stuff, the type of stuff I might talk about with you when I call you in the middle of the afternoon out of the blue. There are so many different ways we can invest in football now. We can bet on a game. We can bet on a total. We can bet on a player prop. We can bet on the Raiders to not win seven games. Or we can, you know, we can bet on best ball leagues. We can bet on all sorts of different things. And I know I'm a winning player in seasonal for my life. I don't have exact figures. I know I've had ebbs and flows to my handicapping. I've had some years were better than others. Last year, I won a couple of handicapping things, but the five picks I release every week had a losing record for like the second time in 10 years. That still drives me crazy. I'm curious, have you figured out what your best EV is? Are you a record keeper? I suspect that maybe a Drew Dinkmeyer or Jonathan Bales probably have some elaborate spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. Maybe Adam Leviton does this, where they can tell you, yeah, this is where I'm making my money, or this is what's been a sweet spot. I think team totals a lot of times are soft enough that you can get an edge. Where's the cheddar at? What has been good for Evan Silva over the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, I've kept records at certain times, but I can't say that I have, you know, an elaborate, recordings of all the things that I've bet on and all the fantasy formats in which I've taken. I tried to when I started out with best ball, and then I played in too many leagues, you know. And so I kind of stopped, and I have kept records of my win totals, because I do these fantasy team previews every year, and at the end of each one, I'll sort of have a take on a team's win total, whether it be maybe betting the over or the under, and how confident I feel about their win total. So on a yearly basis, I've definitely kept track of that. And I mean, I think if you cover the sport, you ought to be able to bat higher than 500 there. And I mean, I have, but you know, it's really awesome when you go 20 and 12 or 22 and 10 or something like that. And I had a year or two like that. And then I've had years where I went just like 17 and 15 or something like that. But you ought to be able to bat higher than 500 when it comes to team totals, when you're picking every single one. And then certainly when you narrow it down to, hey, I'm going to bet on five team totals. You ought to be able to pretty much nail them. Last year, my big over was the Titans over, I believe, 8.5, and then the Broncos under 7.5. So was able to get both of the. Oh, and then also we were on the Bills big time to have a good season. But yeah, when you can narrow it down to just three to five teams that you're going to really go hard on, I think that can be very, very profitable. Season long, I've had big years and not so great years. Like this past year, I had a lot of Cowboys team stacks, I had some Seahawks team stacks that looked really, really good, and then kind of faded toward the end. It was a wild season. I mean, I know we say that every year, and truly every year is a wild season, but with the addition of COVID to, starting out with players just were not conditioned like they usually are coming out of, training camp in the preseason, because there was no preseason and there was hardly any training camp. And so the soft tissue injuries early in the season were brutal. And then, the COVID clusters as we progressed through the season were pretty crazy as well. And just, one thing was that usually in the past, Saturday has been a day where you can kind of just chill and go hang out with your kids and, take your mind off football for a day after worrying about the injury report Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then getting ready for Sunday. But this year, you could not take Saturday off because a lot of big stuff happened on Saturday. So that created sort of an edge for people that had the capability to go, keep the grind on 7 days a week. And if you were taking Saturday off, I mean, that could definitely work to your detriment.
That is a great observation. I mean, the NFL truly turned into a league where news could break anytime. I remember Schefter bombs landing at 4 or 5 in the morning of big news that was actionable, the type of thing that you would run to a waiver wire and have something you could immediately do, or somebody you immediately needed to replace. Yeah, there were weeks where we weren't sure when games were going to get played or if games were going to get played. We had teams that had to shift their bye weeks. The Broncos had 1 week where they had a non quarterback starting, and it just submarined their entire offense. So we were asked to the cadence of the league, the season was all totally different. And just getting people on the field was totally different. Obviously, things will be different next year, but you're totally right. And then this is why just certain things, you have to be. I think everybody's listening to this is probably on Twitter. but you have to be on Twitter. You have to have, if you don't have a couple of NFL insiders in your corner, or, you know, again, you know, anytime this guy Evan is tweeting about something, it's actionable. You need to consider it. There may be an immediate move you can do. And sometimes I don't always find it satisfying. That's the race to the waiver wire. The guy who's the most engaged person online may win a seasonal league, but that's certainly a big part of that success. And this is another point. It's probably obvious, but I just want to underscore it. When we're talking about things like a team over under total, so somebody out there may be listening, say, hey, I play fantasy football, but I'm not, you know, I'm not on a sports book, or I don't really like to gamble on the sport. It's not my thing. Just figuring out who's better than who, or what game's going to have a lot of points in it, or whatever it is, even if you're not handicapping to place a bet on something, all of those things, all of those ability, the skill set to see, oh, okay, people think the Browns are going to be this, and I think they're going to be a lot worse, or whatever it is. Last year, I wish I had gone in with both feet, because I didn't completely send it in on this, but very early I came to the conclusion that the Bills are going to be better than people think, and this is finally the year the Patriots aren't going to have the pieces. It feels like their whole defense is opted out. Obviously, a quarterback change. I don't like their skill talent. And I realize people are afraid to bet against Bill Belichick. I mean, the guy just puts out double-digit win seasons every year. But Buffalo and New England, Buffalo over, New England under, and that's a correlated play too. I thought Buffalo winning the division was tied to New England not being a major contender. And I even think Belichick did a great job with what he had. But so to anybody who listens to the shows when we talk about spreads, we talk about over-unders, even if that's not your thing, even if you're not going to bet a penny on the NFL season, you have to understand that this handicapping process will also correlate. You know, if what makes somebody a good DFS player, or what makes somebody a good handicapper, will also make you a better seasonal fantasy football player.
Yeah, man. I could not agree more. I mean, just understanding the league better, you know, not taking the entire offseason off, you know, keeping track of free agency. I mean, knowledge is gonna be our biggest hedge, you know, and working hard. And I think we could even segue this into the conversation that we had 2 years ago on the Establish the Run podcast about drafting early. And I think that, you know, I think my take on that has kind of evolved over time. And I'm a huge proponent of drafting early, but not just drafting early. I mean, you'll say, you know, on Twitter or something that, you know, you're a proponent of drafting early, and like people get outraged. And I mean, like, seriously, people get outraged about this take. But really what it comes down to, man, is, and I'm that doesn't mean that I'm an opponent of drafting late. I think that just getting in reps, like anything in life, whether it be, you know, 6 months out or 4 months out, or, you know, the day before that Thursday night game starts, or even there are some interesting leagues in FFPC that allow you to draft after the Thursday night game, which adds another layer of strategy because, hey, you know, Kareem Hunt goes off for 43, you know, against the Patriots in that week one game. And all of a sudden, like, I mean, he's in contention to be the number one overall pick just because you can secure that. You get that 43. And that's a huge edge, and especially in a I think it's an 11-week regular season, because then it goes into a longer form of the playoffs in FFPC. But I'm a big proponent of drafting early. And I think the main reason for me, and I had different reasons, I think, back when we talked, and I still believe in those reasons, and I know that you do too. But I think for me, it just comes down to getting reps and drafting as much as you possibly can. That's naturally, like anything in life, you're going to become a better drafter when you draft more, because it's just about getting reps. And I know, you know, one of the first things that I try to, or one of the core principles that I try to teach my daughter is, like, how do you get better at something? By practicing, you know. And that's just the best way to get better at anything, any endeavor in life. And I think that, you know, that's critical in fantasy drafting too.
Totally. Could not agree more. It blows my mind that it wasn't that long ago that I would go into an important draft of mine in the summer, and it would be my first draft of the season, except for maybe a magazine mock that, you know, nobody took ownership really of. You want to get that player pool. You want to get comfortable with the player pool and try different things. Okay, I went Travis Kelce in the first round? What did my team build look like? You know, I went with an early, I took a Patrick Mahomes with an early quarterback. You know, it used to be that everybody, and that quarterback thing is shifting, right? It used to be, okay, you know, J.J. Zacharyson put it out there, you know, late round QB is a winning strategy. I think we're at a point now where you maybe need to reevaluate some of the things that might've been true 5 or 10 years ago, because this game is always evolving. And so, yeah, do different things, try different things. It will give you, that's why best ball has become our best friend. For my money, best ball is like the driving range. Okay. And you're going to work on things. You're going to try things. You have some time to make your pick. You can solicit advice of a friend. You can go on Twitter. You can, you know, crowdsource it if you want. And if you get in some of these best ball leagues, you can get in with a pretty small investment. You will be so prepared when the main season, whatever drafts that are important to you in July or August or September, you would have gone through all those reps and you'll be ready for that. So that is, I think, a gigantic reason to do this. The other thing, the other main reason, this could be a multi-pronged argument, but I think if you're going to be a good fantasy player, it comes down to you need to be able to come up with angles and with truths before they're obvious to everybody else. Once they're obvious to everybody else, it doesn't have anywhere near as much value. If you can figure out a good pickup a week ahead of time, you might get the guy for the minimum bid or maybe as a free pickup. And then the next week when things change a little bit, he's obvious to everybody. Now he's like a 70 or 80% fab purchase for somebody. If you can get to things a little bit early, if you can connect dots a little bit early, if you see the potential of a team or a player to be better or worse than expected, you will never profit on that as much as you will before everything kind of kicks in. It's obvious to everybody. Now, for me, I'm going to wait till the NFL draft actually happens before I open up my best ball portfolio. I've had success in best ball. I'm not sure. It's only been 5 or 6 seasons I've been doing a lot of it, so I'm not even sure if that's enough of a sample to draw conclusions from it. But after the NFL draft happens, by then free agency will pretty much be just about done. Then I'll start jumping in, learning the player pools, and kind of getting ready for my season. Are you comfortable drafting for fantasy before the NFL draft? Are you going to wait till the NFL draft? Give me a sense of when you're really going to jump into that best ball, get the reps in season.
I used to just jump in like right away, but I don't know, maybe it's because I'm getting older and, you know, I'm slowing down or something, but I'm going to do exactly what you do. I'm going to wait until after the NFL draft. I would say that, you know, when I did draft before the draft, and this was actually when I have kept a record of my results, I didn't do very well with my teams that were drafted before the NFL draft. So I don't know. Again, that was a small sample. That was probably like a 2 or 3 season sample that I really kept those records and that I really did that aggressively. So that might be a small sample, but I'm just like, especially after the season we just had, like I kind of need a couple weeks, maybe even like a couple months to just kind of chill out for a while, you know, keep track of certainly, you know, keep a very close tabs on what these teams are doing in free agency in the draft and trying to understand how they're building and all that. But yeah, after that season just filled with all the COVID and the soft tissue injuries. And I need kind of like a breather, honestly.
I know another thing that you do that I think is a cheat code is that, and I think you've been doing this for a few years in a row, that you have a summer break with Warren Sharp, and you guys worked on his book. And Warren Sharp, of course, one of the smartest football minds we have, and you'll work on his book and you'll go to the beach and you'll talk football. And I think if you can find, not everybody is meant to partner up, not everybody's meant to be co-owners. You have to find somebody who you have a kind of similar worldview to. But if you can find that right person, and now all the fab process is split up, all the tough decisions every week are split up, and you have somebody who cares about the team as much as you do. And I found that when I found a good working partnership in different fantasy sports, man, I feel that those teams, the EV just goes off the charts because now you get two heads instead of one. You need to find the right person. There's probably some partnerships that don't work out well at all, and I think that will probably reveal itself quickly. I don't think Warren Sharp or Evan Silva is offering to be anybody's partner right now. They probably have full plates. But I just think that's one of the cheapest yeah, if you find the right person to partner up with, man, I tell you, it's you have so much more coverage. You're sleeping, he might be awake. He might see that Schefter bomb and get you to the wire for that move you need. I think that's one of the simplest but really effective fantasy tips going.
No, I think it's a great, great tip. And it's something that I didn't really realize until maybe the last couple of years when I was actually – when I started to do like live drafts with Adam Levitan. And, you know, it's – and also doing live drafts with like a group of like friends from back in St. Louis where I grew up, and doing like group drafts where we can bounce ideas off of each other during the draft. And, you know, you very often, especially in like the third through, I don't know, the third round on probably, I'd say that it can become closer to a consensus in rounds one and two, but then from rounds three onward, you very often will reach, you know, points in the draft where you're debating between two or three players. And I think that those debates are really, really healthy. And actually, even if you don't technically get your guy, you know, I think you very often feel comfortable just that the people that are drafting the team together feel happy about that pick. And then, you know, they may defer to you on the next, you know, the next time that it comes back around and there's some disagreement between two or three players. And, yeah, I mean, and, you know, people present their arguments for who we should take at a certain point, you know, as you're leading up to your pick, you know, you're like, all right, well, if this guy's going to be available, we got to take him. Or, you know, if these two guys, you know, are available, who are we picking between them? And you almost have your decision made ideally before you go on the clock. But yeah, man, I could not agree more with that. And that has really become apparent to me. Don't just go, I mean, just thinking like, oh, you know, I got everything figured out. I'm one guy. You know, I did put in the research, but it can be very, very helpful to have someone to bounce ideas off of. As you mentioned, I think it's a great point.
And man, I think you're set up to learn the most when you can find the smartest person who disagrees with you on something. You know, if I find myself in on a player and I see you disagree on him, Pat Thorman disagrees on him, Davis Maddock disagrees on him, Rich Rebar disagrees on him. You know, you can have some of the greatest fantasy discussions I get in work I do is stuff, just DMs I do on Twitter or phone calls or emails or whatever it is. And, you know, I'm sure everybody listening knows somebody in their league or somebody in their orbit who really knows this stuff. Another great, great tip, I think, and it's so simple, is I have a good friend of mine who's a huge 49er fan, and he'll watch, if they play have a preseason, he'll have watched every preseason snap, and I can pick his brain. Or, you know, think of the beat writers, some of the athletic beat writers, you know, they're at the practice facility. They can tell you something that we don't know. They can give you an idea, or even just, you know, somebody asked Sean McVay a question on this player and he had a facial expression. Nobody else knows about this, but the beat writer tells you. You know, my friend Dan Williamson, who's doing a lot of great work with Dynasty, my edge a long time ago, he told me the rookie year of Randy Moss, he said, they just had a scrimmage today and he scored 7 touchdowns. And that was back when nobody wanted to touch rookie receivers. Oh, you can't, rookies don't play enough. Why would you want a rookie receiver? He's like, promise me you're going to draft him a couple of times. And that was the edge back then. I had a friend who lived in Minnesota who had Prodigy and I had Prodigy, but those edges are still out there. It's all about who's in your orbit, who's in your, you know, who knows, who's been exposed to stuff that you haven't been exposed to, and pick their brains when you can. And let me talk about, I mentioned Moss as a rookie. I feel like the NFL and college, the games are morphing closer and closer together. And it used to be rookie receivers. Yeah. Don't go too deep with them. Yeah, you know, Moss happened, and Amari Cooper was good as a rookie, AJ Green, but, you know, the 2014 class. But generally, it was kind of like maybe be hands off on those guys. You know, the quarterback, he may not even play right away. The, you know, the running backs, we would generally want to draft them. But we just saw a year where the running backs, oddly enough, got off really slow to the box, the rookie running backs. And then a lot of them were coming on like gangbusters in the second half. We saw an unbelievable receiver class. The 19 class was unbelievable. The 20 class was unbelievable. We all know that there's a ridiculous amount of receiver talent coming into the next draft that's going to happen this spring. You've been playing fantasy for a while. Just give me a sense of, are you more proactive now with rookies? Has the game changed enough that the rules are different now? Now, the one position where it seems like the rookies can't get out of their way is tight end. Maybe it's because they just have too much responsibility, too much learning. They have to block a lot. Just give me a sense of where Evan Silva is now for redraft when it comes to what you do with these rookies.
Well, I think that you alluded to it earlier. Well, and not just with rookies, but you kind of alluded to it earlier that maybe we should start to reevaluate the way that we view the quarterback position in fantasy, because they can be high scoring anchors to a team, especially if we're, I mean, obviously if we're putting together a team stack, but you know, especially also if we're, you know, if we take, you know, their wide receiver one early, I think we should be more aggressive about taking that wide receiver one's quarterback later in the draft. I think with rookies, I still feel like it's a case by case basis. This Kyle Pitts dude coming in, every year there's maybe one or two tight ends that I'm like, oh man, he looks awfully good, you know. And this guy looks like a combination of, people say Darren Waller. I mean, he's head and shoulders above Darren Waller. I mean, he's like the potentially like the Megatron of tight ends, I think. But I still think it's case by case and trying to identify opportunity. I was too low going into the season last year on Justin Jefferson. Yeah. I mean, everyone was, but he was just a guy that was prolific in terms of his production in college. And then he got off to a slow start. I mean, training camp, preseason, he was running behind BC Johnson. And there were some scout. I mean, the NFL was way too low on Justin Jefferson. He went in the early to mid 20s. You know, this guy should have been a top.
So, yeah.
This guy should have been a top 10 pick. You know, now in hindsight, he had what the 50 receptions of 10 or plus more. 10 yards or more, just not only a chain mover, but also a guy. I mean, he was like their vertical receiver opposite Adam Thielen. He just showed that he could do it all. And that was the question about him. Was he a possession receiver coming out of LSU because he spent so much time in a slot? And then he ran 4.43, and it was like, wow, you know, maybe he has more capability than what we just saw when he was running so many slot routes. I compared him to Michael Thomas coming out of college. But I think he's better than that potentially.
If I can interrupt you for a second, I wonder if his stats were so good at LSU that people didn't know how to handle it. That they thought nobody's that good, right? Because you look at his numbers and you're like, how could the Eagles take Rager over Jefferson? It just, in hindsight, it looks so silly. But I wonder if sometimes, because college football has become such a video game, that sometimes people put out stats and people are like, that's so untangible, I can't relate to it, so I'm just not going to take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. And now LSU has Jamar Chase coming out, and it looks like he's going to be the first receiver drafted. I mean, what if Joe Burrow was a creation of Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson?
Well, let me ask you about that. I mean, what's your state of the Tua right now? Because he played with all those tools in Alabama. And you know, it's funny. I know both of us, we don't watch as much college football as maybe some other people do. I'm in on college basketball. I'm a huge golf fan, huge baseball fan. It's a huge part of what I do at Yahoo. I feel like there's going to be some sports I have to be a little bit lesser on, so I don't watch as much college football as maybe I could or should. But by the end of the season, when I started watching Alabama more closely, I thought to myself, I've been cheating myself of watching this offense, which is just every play they run works. It's unbelievable how good they were. Every day somebody talks on Twitter about, look at the roster they had at this point in time. It's like NFL stud, NFL stud, NFL stud all over the place. But it makes it really hard to analyze Mac Jones or Tua. Mm-hmm. Or as you said, Joe Burrow, the unbelievable talent he played with at LSU. Do you have a strong take on any of these quarterbacks as far as they had every toy they could possibly want in college? Burrow, of course, came into the league late. He had a major injury. I predicted he would have the best rookie quarterback season of all time. It turns out maybe Justin Herbert did. I feel like Burrow was set up to fail with that horrible offensive line. Go anywhere you want with this question. Just how do we handle it when a quarterback plays with so many weapons in college that it makes it difficult to evaluate?
I asked the same question to Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus last year, and I mean, I think he just admitted that it was difficult to make that separation between the independent, the independency of Tua in the Alabama offense versus having literally Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Waddle. I mean, that's just ridiculous, right? So, and also having an elite running game and offensive line, you know? So, I don't know. I've sort of been thinking as to how this might pertain to Mac Jones' draft position. Might teams get scared off? First of all, Mac Jones isn't one of these dual threat quarterbacks, right? And I understand that he's accurate and his arm is considered to be, I don't know, average to maybe slightly above average. And then, you know, when teams go to evaluate him, they're going to, I mean, I think that it may get, you know, stuck in their mind that, hey, Tua wasn't very successful in his first NFL season. He's playing with the same supporting – he was playing with the same supporting cast. Did he get over-evaluated? And now we got Mac Jones, who his skill set doesn't look even as good as Tua's, right? So – and his draft prop on DraftKings right now was Mac Jones is 17.5 over-under. I think that people are really expecting him to go – before that, so that would be the under, right? Yeah, the under. So, but I was thinking about maybe betting the over on that if it starts to get to plus minus. I think it's at -112 on both sides right now. I'm not going to take it right now, but if people start to take the under on that and it starts to get like maybe toward like plus 200, I might think about taking the over on that, because I don't think that the reliability of the mock drafts is very good right now. And if you look at any mock draft, pretty much Mac Jones is going under 17.5.
Well, we should give me a quick takeaway on Edwards-Helaire. Opted out of the season, his draft stock went to the moon. Mm-hmm. He was a middle first round pick in some leagues and didn't get out of the first round anywhere I saw. By the end of the draft season, we know he didn't have a year that ultimately validated that. Give me a sense of where you're at with him going forward.
Yeah, I think that maybe figuring out Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be one of the keys to the 2021 fantasy season. And I'm not sure that I have a real strong take on it yet. I probably will be on more the buying side. But I mean, I think that there are some reasons for pause. He's really small. He's not particularly fast. Patrick Mahomes is not like Alex Smith or, you know, some of these quarterbacks that Andy Reid has coached in the past that were, you know, so willing and aggressive to dump off to Brian Westbrook or, you know, even Damian Williams or Kareem Hunt at a really high rate, because Patrick Mahomes is looking to make plays down the football field. I thought it was very curious how few screenplays they ran for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, they ran way more screenplays for Travis Kelce than they did for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And you know, running back screens have always been a major staple of the Chiefs offense. Maybe that came from lack of preparation time before the season with a rookie running back in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But that was surprising to me. He wasn't a big time producer in the passing game, and that was his bread and butter. I mean, what do you have, like 100 catches or something at LSU? He was only a starter there for 1 year, but there are some deficiencies, I think, in his game. He wasn't trusted as a pass blocker. You know, they would bring in Darrell Williams on so many pass plays, and I know that that's not really, you know, a role that carries fantasy point scoring significance, but it does, you know, I mean, you want your running back to be on the field as much as they possibly can. And if he has to be pulled out of the game in certain instances, I mean, that's going to hurt his fantasy stock. You know, I remember like Ryan Matthews was a very talented guy, but they didn't trust him to pass block or play in the 2 minute drill. And that would always have a major, you know, negative impact on his fantasy output, in addition to him getting hurt.
Right. I feel like with every running back, we have to ask ourselves, do I foresee cheap touchdowns, you know, the 1, 2, 3 yard plunges? And is this guy going to be game script proof? If they get behind 17 points and you have to go hurry up, is he going to be on the field? And maybe we also have to act, you know, it's funny. It used to be when mobile quarterbacks were on a team, we'd say, oh, that's good because it will spread the defense out wide. It will set up running lanes. But there's another side to that. Yeah. Okay. For whatever Kyler Murray's athleticism opened up in Arizona, a lot of those rushing touchdowns went to Kyler Murray. And he was very much like you talked about with Mahomes. I think even more so with Murray. When a play breaks down, he wasn't looking to dump it off to one of his running backs. He was looking to run, and he's so dynamic at it, so good at it, and he seemed pretty proactive getting out of harm's way, which, of course, is a huge key. If you take on the hits, one of them will eventually knock you down. That's always been the Russell Wilson secret sauce. When he would run, and he started to tone that down a little bit, but he would know when to call the play off, when to say, I'm sliding, I'm out of bounds. And what a cheat, because the defense doesn't know what to do. They're afraid to hit these guys. They're afraid to get personal fouls. So, Lamar Jackson can take advantage of these extra yards. I think as I get into my fantasy prep for the next year, I got to ask myself about every quarterback, especially every mobile one. And at this point, it feels like there's more mobile than non-mobile quarterbacks. Do I see him throwing to the running backs? Do I see who's getting the touchdowns at the goal line? Just give me a general sense of quarterback. Are we at a point now where I don't want to draft a pocket quarterback? I mean, would you, Matthew Stafford goes into a much better situation with the Rams. He's not going to run the ball. We know that. I think he has a much better chance of making a broken play than Jared Goff ever did. But is it maybe a mandate now that we better have a Konami code guy on our side? And do you see a downside for the running backs that if they're tied to a running quarterback, maybe that the bucket has a bigger hole in it for that running back than we might have thought previously?
Well, I think that if you're not going to draft a dual threat quarterback, you better make sure that your quarterback is your pocket quarterback is either going to be throwing the ball with extreme volume or that he's going to be incredibly efficient, or else he's not going to be very good in fantasy football. And that's the bottom line. I think Matthew Stafford this year has a chance to be very efficient and could therefore overcome that sort of shortcoming in his game. Matt Ryan has at times, although this was a tough year for Matt Ryan. He did miss Julio for like half the season. But I mean, he has been able to overcome not being a dual threat quarterback with just extreme volume. So there are some guys that can overcome it. Tom Brady was a good fantasy quarterback this year. He was so efficient with just maybe the best supporting cast in the league, from their offensive line to their pass catchers. So there are going to be a few guys that can maintain a high level of quarterback one productivity that are pocket passers. But man, the guys that can move and that can add 40 rushing yards week in and week out, or, score, 5 to 7 rushing touchdowns. I mean, that's a massive, massive edge over the pocket passers that have to, narrow that gap with just throwing the ball like 45 times a game.
Getting to the end of our talk with Evan Silva, co-founder of Establish the Run, and just one of the best dudes in fantasy football in the industry. Just the stuff he does on Twitter. I have mad respect for how much you've worked to try to amplify voices who people may not know about. You've done a lot to help people spearhead their careers. Obviously, you mentored a lot of people at Roto World and continue to do that at ETR. Mad props for that. Give me a really quick answer on this, only because you mentioned Julio Jones. This is the name for the podcast. This is for me. For all I know, producer Ragu may even cut this out. I'm at a point where I'm getting nervous to draft Julio Jones. Yeah. This guy's a walking Hall of Famer, but we know for whatever reason, he generally doesn't score the touchdowns you would think that would be commensurate with his role in the offense. Matt Ryan's getting a little bit old. Obviously, everybody's getting older, but these guys are getting into ages where you start to get nervous. Mm-hmm. I can't be proactive. I reserve the right to change my mind, but right now I can say with a fair amount of conviction that Julio Jones will not be a proactive fantasy pick for me this year. Give me a sense of where you're at with Julio.
Well, it's just going to come down to his ADP. I totally get where you're coming from. Maybe that will become the popular sentiment, though, and then you'll have to circle back.
The value will be there, sure.
Yeah, right. It's going to be – we talked about this sort of – Adam and I on a recent podcast, and he just asked me straight up, who would you take, Calvin Ridley or Julio Jones, right now in a redraft league? And I said, without hesitation, it'd be Calvin Ridley, so there's that. But I mean, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where his ADP lands. I mean, hey, if he starts to creep into the fourth or fifth round, I'm probably going to start picking him off, but I'm not going to be taking him in the second round. So I'm with you there.
And that's one of the great rules of thumb, that with most players, there's a price that's too high and you're out, and there's a price that's so good you're in.
Right.
And you can't, you don't want to be dogmatic about things. Right. Like when I said not proactive about Julio Jones, that certainly doesn't mean that when the right circumstance, I'm like, man, they gave me Julio Jones in the fourth round. Thank you. I'll take that all day. So you have to obviously season it to the taste of your room. I mean, we could easily book 3 or 4 hours on this, but you know, eventually the producers are going to say, we got to get this out to the people. And if you're into podcasts, Yahoo Sports, we've got a lot of them going on. The Yahoo Sports College Podcast, March Madness, anyone? Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and our old friend Pat Forty over at SI. They do a three-man weave, which is wonderful. Chris Haynes is kicking ass on our Yahoo Basketball NBA podcast. So you want to check that out. This show is a regular staple in the offseason. We do 5 shows during the regular season, the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. And, of course, on Twitter, I'm at Scott_Pianowski. Yahoo Fantasy is our fantasy handle. You can catch Evan. He was lucky to get in on his name really early. See, Evan's always early to stuff. Evan Silva on Twitter. Evan, tell everybody what's going on ETR and how they can keep up with you.
Yeah, we'll be pumping out some free agency content here very soon. Justin Herzig, who won a $200,000 prize playing best ball this past year, has started to produce a bunch of best ball content for us. We've got best ball rankings up. So if you want to start getting these reps in before the draft and before, you know, the heart of free agency, we've got some good content up at Establish the Run.
Yeah, I'm going to leave you with this. If you've got nothing else from this podcast, you will have a better seasonal season this year if you increase your best ball drafting. You know, Yahoo, of course, has a best ball product, and I hope you check that out as well. But it's all about the reps. You know, go to the driving range, man, because you will be, by the time you get the seasonal, you'll be amazed at how comfortable you will be with the player pools. And no matter what draft slot you get, or if you're in a salary cap league, how that flow goes, man, you'll be ready. So get your reps in, whether you start before or after the draft, doesn't matter. It's just a great time to get engaged with the next NFL season. My thanks to Evan Silva, again, is just as great a dude as you can ask for in the fantasy space. Thanks to producer Ragu, as always, keep us on the air sounding great. I am Scott Pianowski. We'll have another show next week. This time, different host. And don't forget to sign up for the Yahoo Fantasy 50K Tourney Pick'em Contest. You're going to pick Marquette? Are they even making the tournament this year, Evan?
I don't think so. I've watched a few games. I don't pay close enough. I couldn't tell you what the record is, but the last time I checked, it was not very good. So I don't think they're going to make it.
Are you a college basketball guy?
I am. I just like to watch like individual games. It used to be my favorite sport, but it just became too difficult, I think, to follow where all the players are and all the coaches. But I love to like have it on in the background with maybe, you know, a $50 bet while I'm working. That's the life for me. That's one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah. It's been, as somebody who lives in the middle of Big Ten country, what a just awesome Big Ten season. Michigan's great. I think Iowa is about as fun a team to watch. I hope I get well soon, Joe Wieskamp, the health of a player who turned an ankle the other day. But I'm going to watch the heck out of the Big East tournament, then the Big Ten tournament, and then get ready for March Madness. So please go over to our 50K tourney pick'em, sign up, try to beat us. We'll have all sorts of contests and giveaways. And if you get the right picks, maybe you'll have $50,000 in your wallet. Again, for Evan Silva, who's been our gracious guest today, I'm Scott Pianowski. Talk to you soon.